You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. Okay, this is the first episode of the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. I'm Mike Alvarez.
I'm Mike McCoy.
I'm Tara Marie Matravich.
I'm Maurice Killifer.
And we're going to be talking about a lot of horror movies. The way this podcast is going to work out is every month we're going to pick a topic, and each of us will pick a movie within that topic. So the topic for this month is remakes. Our first episode to kick us off was actually Tara's pick, and she picked...
Rob Zombie's Halloween.
A very good movie, in my opinion.
And I'm so excited.
So, all right, let's just get right into it. So, yeah. Tara, since it was your pick, what were your thoughts on this movie?
So, pretty much what I love about Rob Zombie's remake is that he is not shy to show us brutality.
Absolutely.
He just goes for it, and it makes it so uncomfortable. And that's what really is scary about it.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part is when young Michael, he gets his bully in the woods. And when they show the close-up to the bully's face, and it doesn't even show the contact of the stick. Mm-hmm. It just, you can hear the noise and the impact on his head, and it shows it slowly getting to him and to where he just fades away. And that, to me, is so psychologically damaging.
It's chilling. It really is.
Yeah.
The thing that gets me in that particular scene is how he's focusing on the trees. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like that, you know, they always say the moment of death, like, everything else leaves. You know, like, you're focused on random things. Mm-hmm. You know, you're somewhere else. You know, so you're not even paying attention to what you're seeing. And the funny thing about that was, Rob Zombie apparently didn't plan that. He just filmed the trees randomly. He does that. He'll film certain things and figure out, maybe I'll use this, maybe I won't. And when it came to that scene, with him laying on his back looking up, he's like, well, shit, I'm going to edit in the trees here. And it worked so damn well. It was so creepy.
Right, because if you look at it from his point of view, the bully's mm-hmm. point of view, like, there's really nothing he can do at that point. He's, like, completely physically, you know, destroyed at that point, and he's just like... You fade out into the light, which was the sky and the trees, so...
That kid was such a dick.
He wasn't. I was really happy when that happened. Yeah. I'm like, okay, good for you, fuckbag.
But you know that...
Excuse the F-bomb.
No. Like I said, I'll edit him in cacao later. But no, like, the thing that I really liked about this portrayal in particular was... in most movies, bullies feel Hollywood. They feel fake. When I was a kid and you dealt with bullies, they were doing shit like spitting on you, talking about screwing your mom. Like, they were messed up. They were filthy little bastards. Yeah. And these guys were filthy little bastards. And it's like, they were realistic, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So when he got his comeuppance, I was like, you know what? I don't really feel bad for you.
Right.
But a couple things about Rob Zombie in particular. One thing I noticed with every one of his movies, and I'm unapologetically a fan of all of his movies, every character in every one of his movies looks dirty.
Oh, yeah. God,
they
yeah.
always look... Like, I feel like they would be sticky if you touched them. You know?
Like, I feel like you need to take a shower after watching these movies.
It's like, you feel like their skin is sticky and they probably smell like hot garbage.
Yeah.
You know?
But then they're having sex.
Right!
Too. And, like, when me and Mike were watching it, we're just like, ugh. Like, his sister is having sex with that grody-ass looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
And
I want to do it with the mask on.
Yeah, what the hell is up with that? Who does that?
And she's just looking at him like, why am I with this dude? Like,
like, I just let you touch me.
Yeah.
And you know he didn't wash up. And then he's in there getting his nasty sex fingers all over the lunch meat in the fridge of the house he don't live in. He's just like, I'm gonna mess with your meats. Like, that's gross. Like,
yeah,
nasty dude.
He got his head beat in.
Michael was like, I was gonna eat that turkey.
Yeah, Michael, he was just like, honestly, his home life was disgusting, mm-hmm. and everyone picked on him and beat the shit. I don't blame him.
Oh, yeah.
I don't blame him at all for what he did to everybody.
That's what I thought was interesting about it, is that he did give him that more of the backstory. They dove into Michael's life before just becoming the serial killer, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was cool because they tried to do that in the made-for-TV version. Or I shouldn't say made-for-TV, the TV edit of Halloween back in the, was it, 1978 version. There was, because the runtime went longer, so they had to add moments to the film. So there was usually a TV edit in the 70s and 80s. One of my favorite, you know, jokes from the R-rated movie to the TV edit is in Return of the Living Dead. There's, Freddy has a jacket that says fuck you on it, and in the TV version, it just says TV version, so, which I love, but, there's, in the original Halloween, there's a whole section with Loomis talking to the people at Smith's Grove about Michael, and they show more of him as a kid. Now, it's very brief, it's only, like, maybe 10 minutes of footage, but they give you a little bit more of just, you know, in the original cut, it's like, oh, he killed his sister. The parents are like, Michael, what did you do? And then 20 years later, and it's like, okay, he was in a mental asylum that whole time. This one, you at least see more.
Yeah. Is that when he was sitting in the room by himself, like it was like a daydream thing, and Laurie Strode came in to talk to him?
Did she come in? I don't think she came in. No, the one I'm thinking of, it's like he's sitting in a room, and then they show Loomis kind of watching him through the window, and then he's standing before like a council of the like other doctors at Smith's Grove. And he's like telling him, like, you need to keep him locked away for life. I actually have it's an old DVD release, but it had the TV cut and then theatrical cut. And that's the difference, the one difference. Come on, Maurice, what you got to say?
I don't think I've seen that one.
Well, what do you think of Rob Zombie's remake?
It's one of my favorite remakes of the remake genre. I like everything that Rob Zombie does, though, so I'm kind of biased.
Yeah.
Well, it was like when we went to go see Lords of Salem, I think we were the only two people in the entire theater that enjoyed the movie.
So let down by that movie.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was so let down by that movie.
Really?
I liked it up until the midget Satan with tentacles.
Yeah.
It just blew my mind. I was like, this is so weird.
See, I loved that because, like, it almost felt like a joke of, like, you know, you think of this larger-than-life monster, and he comes out like, man, I got a tentacle wang, you know? But I loved it. I loved that movie so much. But again, like I said, unapologetically love his movies. The only Rob Zombie movie I'm not crazy about is El Super Bisto. And it's like a really weird cartoon movie that went direct to DVD. And it's funny, but it's just really vulgar. And it's like, all right, you know, once is enough kind of thing. You watch it and forget about it.
Now, was that out before Halloween or was that after Halloween?
That was before.
That was before.
Yeah, because he did House of Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, and then he was working on... Oh, no, you know what? He was working on it while he was working on Halloween. Okay. And it was released to DVD. It was supposed to come out in theaters, but it didn't come out in theaters. And then Halloween came out, I want to say, like, that year. Because Michael Myers does make an appearance in El Super Bisto. He gets run over by the main character. Kind of like Ben Tramer in part 2.
Poor Ben Tramer.
Yeah, he gets no love.
That is actually what I thought was really cool, is he kept the names the same. Like, they mentioned Ben Tramer in there. So like,
yeah.
Pretty cool. And the same characters.
Yeah.
I love the, and I quote, dude, she's fucking hot. That scene was great.
Yeah, I love... me and Mike were talking about how, you know, they brought in Danielle Harris, and I love cameos like that. I like when they put in actors that were either a part of a series or there's some kind of connection. I get really excited about that. So to see her in it, and, you know, she's just one of the teenagers, and she was like, what, 30-something at the time?
She was like 30 at the time, yeah.
Even, and she's maybe like even late 20s, so young. But... And she's
she can play young. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's a great actress. Like, she's good in everything.
Yeah.
Actually, that's one of the things I was going to say about, again, all Rob Zombie movies. He has the best casts.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, in this one alone, I mean, we got Tyler Mane, Malcolm McDowell, Danielle Harris, Brad Dourif, William Forsythe, Udo Kier, Clint Howard, Danny Trejo, Richard Lynch, Lou Temple. Like, there's just so many great horror icons.
I know.
And it's every one of his movies. Like, seriously, everyone has great characters.
And he usually keeps them the same character.
He'll keep bringing back, you know, the same faces, which is getting me a little sad for Three from Hell, because, man, Sid Haig is looking rough.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm glad he's in it.
I thought he looked kind of rough in Halloween. That was back in 2007.
He did.
So.
Yeah.
But he's looking really skinny now.
Oh, yeah.
I think because, you know, what is he, in his 70s now?
Oh, he's got probably 80s. To 80, yeah. I bet you he's in his 80s now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he's in his 80s. He might be closing in on him, though. I think he's in his 70s.
You know what? I think he might be 80, because I thought we talked about this when it came out in 2007. Was he like 73 at the time when that came out?
Oh, I don't know.
I kind of remember talking about his age at one point.
I'll say we'll have to look into that and see.
It took me forever to realize that Malcolm McDowell was the same guy from Clockwork Orange.
Oh, really? Oh.
Somebody actually had to tell me that, and I was like, no, that's not possible.
Same.
Yep.
And Sid Haig is 79.
See? Closing in on 80.
39, so I mean, he's still badass. Oh, like, oh my God. He's amazing, so.
I was glad I got to meet him when I did, because I met him in Chicago back in 2003. And it was right after House of Thousand Corpses was out on DVD. And I went, you know, met him, gushed about how much I love the movie, brought up how much I liked the movie Spider Baby, and he was like, holy crap, you actually know that movie? You know, and I was like, he was just a real nice guy. He started telling me about The Devil's Rejects. He's like, I can't tell you what we're doing next, but we're filming the sequel. And I was like so jazzed to know that a sequel was coming, because it had been rumored, but no one was really saying much. But he was telling everybody at the convention, like, we're doing a sequel, we're doing another one. He was cool.
And, like, speaking of, like, girl actresses and stuff, Scout Taylor Compton is, like, my girl crush. I love her.
She's awesome, though. Like, she's a really good actress.
She was really good. And I seen her in, like, other movies when she was younger. Like, there was a movie called Sleepover. It's, like, this preteen, like, cute movie. And I'm like, oh, my God, she's so little in it. But I love that movie. So to see her portray this and, you know, also, like, when the second one came out, she was, like, so badass. Like, she had the cool hair, and I remember, oh, God, I think I was just going into college, so I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to look up to her, and, like, wanted her style and everything. I thought she was awesome. She's still gorgeous and everything.
Oh, God, yeah.
I thought she played a really good Laurie Strode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think she did, too.
She started off so innocent and, like, cutesy, and almost, there is a little bit of annoying sense to her, because she's so cutesy, but then, like, you see that switch quick in the second one, and I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how Jamie Lee Curtis started. Exactly. You know, very shy at first, and then...
Yeah.
She played it very well. And actually, that's something, since we're talking about the second one, that I want to bring up. Everybody hates on Halloween 2, on Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
The real second one? Or?
No, the Rob Zombie Halloween 2. Everyone hates. I friggin' love that movie.
I loved it.
My only beef at all is that they have Michael speak.
Yeah.
That's the only complaint I have. Yeah. I don't mind that he's not wearing the mask. In fact, I kind of prefer it. You know, I like the way that they switched the characters. Like, in the original one, in the original timeline, you know, Laurie becomes completely introverted and afraid of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, because what happens when someone experiences a trauma? Either you become introverted or you lash out at the world.
Yeah.
And so remake Laurie lashed out at the world. Like, I love that they went in a completely different direction with her. You know, Loomis became obsessed with Michael in the original. In this one, he's just like, fuck all y'all, I'm cashing in.
Yeah.
You know, and didn't care about anyone but himself. Like, it was really interesting to see what Rob Zombie decided to do with those characters. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing about a remake. You don't want the same thing. You want to see new. And he did new stuff while being, you know, true to the story. I mean, that was fantastic.
And I like that it wasn't, you know, speaking of the second one, that it wasn't all in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that was the beginning sequence.
Yep.
And, like, it took a while, and it's like, oh, crap.
I like how it was a dream.
Yeah.
Just enough to pay homage, like, pay respects to what came before it, and then move on to your own stuff.
Yeah.
But we made the connection last night when we watched it. In the beginning of the first one, when... Michael's mom, Sherry Moon Zombie's leaving the strip club. We saw the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, wait a minute. That's the same guy from the second one, the Frankenstein dude. We're like, he went back to the strip club his mom worked at and killed them.
Mm-hmm.
We never caught that.
Yeah, and I've seen this movie so many times, but I just never made that connection. And I was like, wow, that's even better.
Yeah, no, that I think Rob Zombie got unfairly or unjustly maligned for these movies. And again, I think it comes down to the remake curse. You know, like we said in our you know, little pilot episode that we were messing around with remakes, people tend to hate them before they even see any footage. So it's like me and Reese talk about this all the time. Like, when we went to go see RoboCop, the entire internet was shitting on RoboCop. They're like, it's gonna be terrible. It doesn't have Peter Weller in it, so it's bad. It's instantly bad. you know, we went to go see it with an open mind. It was awesome. Like, it was a really good RoboCop movie. I remember we're standing outside for like a good 45 minutes being like, why did no one like this? You know?
Because people don't like remakes.
And that's really all it boils down to is just, it's a remake, therefore it's bad. And you're missing out.
And then you also have the people who watched it back then and they have a standard for horror movies and they're not fans of gore and, right. and slash and like I said earlier, Rob Zombie is not afraid to go hardcore. No. So for some people it's too much or they're like, yeah. oh, I don't like this because of that, like a Grammy shoot, obviously. Yep. The older generation is not gonna like the blood and gore and the realistic mm-hmm. aspect of it. To me, that's what's scary. It's like, okay, I'm 5'1", standing next to Tyler Mane.
the giant, who's like 6'8". Yeah.
Exactly, like seeing a man like that, his mass size, which I love that Rob Zombie cast him, because mm-hmm. it makes him even scarier, you know, is even more just terrifying in my opinion, you know, and brutal. And,
totally
and
agree.
His strength, it makes more sense.
The way he, oh my God, there's two scenes where his strength is really apparent that is frightening to me. Is when he grabs Laurie's dad, when he's outside having a cigarette, and like there's just, it's not even a cut, like
it just happens so yeah, randomly, just, and it just
boom right in the house, like just
yeah.
Oh, it's like holy like, shit,
yeah.
You know, and then when he's fighting with Ken Fiore's character,
Joe Grizzly,
yeah, Joe Grizzly. Thank God, I couldn't remember his name, but which I a little side tangent on that. No one wipes in horror movies. I was like, dude just hoisted up some shitty drawers, you know, and then Michael put it on. So he's walking around in skid mark jumpsuit. Like,
I said that. She goes, well, look at his feet. He doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I said, like, we both said the same thing because we're like, wait, so he's taking a dirty douche.
Yeah, he even said, he's like, I got a burrito, whatever, barking at me. And he's like
talking back yeah, at me. You might want to come back.
They actually, when they pan over his dead body, I tried to look, and I'm pretty sure there was a turd in the toilet.
So Michael's walking around in a shitty jumpsuit.
I mean, unless he's wearing underwear, so we...
I don't know, he was in a hospital gown, so...
No, I mean...
Him in his...
Fiore.
Tights.
Yeah, he had his
he had his tights on, yeah. So his long johns or whatever they're called when he was laying on the ground.
Oh, well, so he left his skid marks on that.
Yeah, he's free balling in the jumpsuit.
Yeah, well, that's fine. At least there's no doo-doo.
Gotta air those boys out when you're killing people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, from the look of Michael's feet, I don't think he showers that much to begin with. So,
yeah, so he probably, but maybe he does need to air him out then. Yeah. I mean,
but now I'm thinking about it. In the second one, he has a beard.
Yeah.
Who the hell shaved his beard in the first one while chained up?
Probably Danny Trejo.
You think so?
Yeah, because like, yeah. he was taking care of him, yeah. So I'm like, he's probably like in there, okay, you know, got him chained up, and we're gonna get the bick right. over the face.
I think Michael Myers had the respect for him.
Yeah, I mean, think it was when he was escaping. He right. was just like, no one's getting in my way, you.
It was fight or flight. And I'm going to fight so I can get out of here. You know?
See, it was sad, man.
So it was more of fight and flight.
And they made it so drawn out. And then he took the TV. I said and that was smashed so him. Horrible. He drowned for like 5 minutes.
I was reading a thing the other day on screenplay writings and for specifically horror genres. And one of the rules on there for when you're writing one was, with the character development with a horror movie, if you kill somebody off and the audience is like sad or bummed about it, you did your job.
Yeah.
So, that's true.
And it's actually, we really did a good job with the character development in this one. And killing him off for sure was like probably one of the best things he did in that movie.
Yeah. No, it was very effective. It was a total bummer.
I love Danny Trejo.
That I'm me too. I'm like, oh,
Michelle. You see it in the first time, you're like, oh, maybe he will, like,
yeah.
like one glimpse of light, but, you know, I know exactly.
No.
The one glimpse of light he had was at the end when he showed Laurie the picture.
Yeah.
Like, that was not the evil.
Yeah, that was him trying to reconnect.
Right, and she... You know, not her fault. She just didn't know who that was. You know, she didn't
stabbed
know.
Stabbed him, and he's right. like, nope. Put nope. the mask
yeah,
on.
Game over after that.
Not going to end like Texas Chainsaw 3D, where she takes care of him.
Ugh, let's not talk about that movie right now because I hate that movie, so...
Texas Chainsaw 3D.
I'm the only one here that likes it.
I like it.
No.
What's it?
I liked it.
I liked that movie.
Did you? I thought you argued... No, Matt was arguing with me, sorry.
It was... Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was you arguing with
me,
but...
It's remember she's on the meat hook and...
No, Texas Chainsaw 3D, that's the one... where it was like the Hatfields versus the McCoys.
That's
it was
right,
like
yeah.
The family that hated the Sawyer clan. Exactly.
Ding, 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 ding.
But I don't know. I really enjoyed that movie. I'm not going to lie. It didn't make a lot of sense. There were a lot of moments where it's like, that doesn't add up. Because they tried to sequelize the original and not give it a designated time frame.
Yeah, it was the 70s, I think, or 80s, and the one dude is a real rapper, and they played his song while they're driving in the truck. So
yeah, like, but see, that's the thing. They tried to, like, avoid any mention of the 70s. So, like, if you notice all the newspaper articles, there was no dates listed.
Even the
all
tombstones.
The tombstones. They made sure the dates were obscured. So they could be like, oh, well, maybe the original happened in the 90s. Like, yeah, because people were rocking those kind of outfits in the 90s.
Well, and iPhones.
Yeah, well, no, the new, because it was supposed to be back then and then present day.
Right.
The early part with the iPhone, or the later part with the iPhone is present day.
Yeah.
You know, but...
But the time frame still doesn't make sense.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't add up.
So, kind of a connection going back to, like, time frames. I was talking to Mike, and I'm like, I got confused with the time...
Oh, yeah.
Because it's Michael, and it was supposed to be, what, the 70s, correct?
In the original.
Well, in Rob Zombie's version.
But they don't say the date.
Right, that's what you're trying to think.
Because when it's 15 years later, the one teenager has a cell phone.
Right.
And so, like, I was like, wait, but, like, their style, their shirts.
Their style, and he always films things, like, around the 70s.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything
and the music.
The
music's from the 70s. Yeah,
another thing, it's always great. It was soundtracks.
Oh, the soundtrack,
and the candy.
Yeah.
Like, I was even, you know, looking at the candy he was eating. He was eating, like, candy corn. Like gummies, like
his costume was very Ben Cooper inspired.
Exactly,
you know?
So it's like
peanut things.
The circus peanuts. Yeah. Oh, I hate those things.
Oh, those are good.
So, you know, that kind of made me question, like, okay, this is supposed to be 15 years later. Well, there wouldn't be cell phones at least of that little size. So,
right.
I was a little confused after that. So
I think that's just why he tries to make it be like, we're not going to say a time. It just everything in his world perpetually looks like it's in the 70s. You know?
Yeah, that's so true. Because even Loomis, he had like the long hair and stuff. And
right.
I'm like, okay, well, now I don't even know.
I'm assuming the movie took place when it actually came out in 2007, but...
The modern part.
Yeah.
So that would mean, what was it? It was 20 years, right? Between, or 15.
15.
Yeah.
15 years. Okay, so that means that the early part would have been the 90s.
Right.
You know, which would have, I guess, made some semblance of sense, but it's still like, it felt like the
70s. Oh,
yeah. But again, that's just Rob Zombie being Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
That's his style.
Yeah, I was going to say, shit.
Even the nurse with, like, the little nurse hat and stuff.
Oh, she
like,
was such a bitch.
Yeah.
That was another part in that, the part that was missing with the different versions. My version didn't have the part when she looked at the picture and said, cute baby,
can
possibly be related to you. She just looked at the picture and said, cute baby, and that was it. And then he just stabbed her unprovoked.
Oh, see, now I like that better because it shows that he's becoming a monster. Whereas this, it's like, again, he's provoked, you know, and it's like, and... I wanted to smack this lady.
Like,
that's so wrong. You don't say that to a kid. I don't care if he is crazy. You know, it's like, that's messed up.
When I saw that originally, I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
She deserved to get stabbed.
And she got forked.
Yeah, and a metal fork in a psych ward.
Not something you do.
Maybe something in the 70s.
See, that's very, that's something very 70-ish.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, I'm like, what the heck?
It's been plastic for years, so...
Sporks,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it's a little bit mix of everything, you know.
Yeah, I think it's just they try to be ambiguous with the time frame.
Each part took place in different time periods.
Zombie's like, I want some 70s, little 80s, sprinkle in some 2000s.
Right. Yeah.
Just enough so you can have a cell phone, you know.
Now, you know, here's something that bugs me about all of the Halloweens. Like, everyone from the originals through the remakes. Why the Shatner mask? Not why did they use it, but why is he obsessed with it? Because he does his first killing in a clown mask, both in the original and in the remake. Then in the remake, we see him obsessed with all masks. Like, he's making a plethora of masks. So what is it about that particular one? In the original one, he gets the mask by robbing a drugstore. Yeah. He just goes in and grabs it. So how come he's gone back for that particular mask in every effing movie? It just... I mean, I get it. You want the, you know, the iconic look. You want Jason in the hockey mask kind of thing.
Maybe,
but...
maybe that's, you know, when... Not his first kill, but maybe when he killed his sister with the mask on, that's what made him... All right, this is me. This is what I'm going to be.
This is like his killer persona.
Right.
Because they never actually showed if he was... I'm assuming he would have been the one who put it in the basement under the floorboards when he went
back to the house. Yeah, because he knew where it was, yeah. So yeah.
So maybe it was something special to him because it was his... Well, it wasn't his first kill, yeah.
No, that's what he had the claw mask, but, you know, where he killed his stepfather.
And the bully.
And the bully, or the, you know, the...
The creepy dude with the... sex fingers all over the hand.
Yeah, and but yeah, so maybe that's where he was like, you know what, I kind of enjoy this.
Yeah, this, you know, this is sick, me now.
Demented, but yeah, so. Yeah.
And the fact that, like, I mean, you could make a little bit of connection where his, where Ronnie, the asshole guy, is like, take that mask off. Before I, you know, like, rip it off, and then he hits it off of him.
Mm.
So maybe... You know, again, that was some kind of more solid latex, like...
Covered his full face.
It feels more like skin, you know, right. Maybe that, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it could be like a second skin.
Yeah.
More comfort.
Yeah.
Comfort
I think
kills.
He was just really a Star Trek fan. And
you know? Poor Shatner.
Although I heard he's kind of a dick, so, you know.
Okay, good.
speaking of Ronnie's kill, though... watching the commentary, they were talking about how they had to film that,
mm-hmm.
and I could not go through with it as an actor. I guess it was like a real thin appliance, and like it's the kind of appliance you have to cut.
Yeah.
So they didn't have, what is his name, Daig, the kid who played Michael?
Yeah.
They didn't have him film that. It was a stand-in, a like smaller framed woman who was dressed like Michael, because they actually had a real knife and had to cut across the latex to release the blood.
See, that would freak me out. That has always freaked me out when I see any kind of throat slicing.
Same.
Because that's what I think of.
Sorry. Yeah. The second one when they the paramedic and the ambulance and just tearing at his throat.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. Yeah. Oh, the sawing of a throat is even worse than slitting.
Yeah.
That's but weird. I never knew that.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I paused when I was rewatching it this time. I paused it on that scene. And if you have to look close, it's very well applied, but you can see where it's built up along the side of his neck and across his throat.
Bubble or something, I thought.
Yeah, well, it's like right across here.
Yeah.
You see, like, it's just slightly built up, and then, you know, they start pumping the blood through it once they cut it.
Yeah.
Was that was it Blu-ray that you watched it on?
No, DVD.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sure on Blu-ray you can see it better.
I was going to say, damn high definition.
No, because I can definitely tell there's a little bit of build up there, but it also makes sense because the way he's taped down.
Yeah, he's holding his head back so your Adam's apple would stick out a little.
And just the way it just like pours out like a waterfall.
Oh, that's so gross.
That is the kill that gets me. Like how you were telling me with the baseball bat scene was the one that got you, because I'll let you talk about that one, but that, because he couldn't do anything. He couldn't move the train.
He's completely...
anything.
Yeah.
That freaks me out.
Yeah, that boy is, like, brutal. Because you hear him breathing and then just, like... I thought to myself, like, that is one of the most brutal kills, is getting throat sliced.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can't stop it.
Yep.
You know? But the scene that really gets me, like, really, really gets me for some reason, is when Michael kills the boyfriend with the aluminum bat.
Yeah.
Because the first whack... you see him go down and have a seizure.
Right.
Yes.
And that, like, makes me so uncomfortable. And just thinking about that, like, oh, God, it's worse than, like, blood for me for some reason. He's just, like, twitching and, like, oh.
Mm-hmm. It's also great acting because...
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, how many movies do you actually see that? You just see, you know, you're dead. You get hit with a bat, you're dead. This is what would really happen if you got hit by an aluminum bat.
Yeah. The only other one I can really think of that does that and does it well is the original Texas Chainsaw, where Leatherface whacks dude in the head with the mallet, and he goes down, and he's twitching all over the ground.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw that. little side story with Texas Chainsaw real quick. When I was a kid, I was only not allowed to watch two horror movies. One was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the other one was I, Madman. And when I was 17, I went out and rented Texas Chainsaw, because I forgot about the movie. And it was like, I'm walking around Blockbuster. I'm like, oh my God, I never got to see this. Well, I'm old enough, I'm buying it, you know. So I'm watching it, and it gets to that scene, and immediately I'm terrified. I'm just like, I don't know, I think I made a mistake, you know. Like, I was up all night.
The door slides open.
Oh my God. That movie still, it's one of the few movies that will give me nightmares. Like, it is really effective.
I feel the same way about that, but, you know, you tell this newer generation... Yeah, or if you had them watch it, they're like, this is the corniest movie
slow,
ever.
It's slow, yeah.
It's like, this movie is the only movie that actually legit scares me anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I go back, every time I watch it,
Same.
It scares the hell out of me.
Well, I just posted the other day on Facebook, I was rewatching it, and that opening with the phosphorescent, like, yeah. film, you know. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, here's a glimpse of a dead body, go to black. You know, that gives me the chills every single time. Oh, man. That's also the reason why every time we're in a haunted house and someone comes running out as Leatherface, we all book it. You know?
Yeah. Well, that used to bother me. Chainsaws used to be the number one thing until Mike over here, my loving boyfriend, started working at Fright World. Mm-hmm. And he is the chainsaw guy, so now it doesn't really bother me as much. I'm like, oh, it's just my boyfriend.
You know? I won't lie, last time we went through and he went straight for you, I'm like, we out! You know?
Just don't piss him off during the day.
And then all his chainsaw buddies, when me, him, and his mom go through, his buddies come after us with the chainsaw and actually hit us with the chainsaw. Yeah,
three of them.
Now, to be fair, the first time you came with me, Josh, and was it Danielle?
Yeah, I booked it.
We did, but then we did Moose Hands. That kind of killed the chainsaw fear, because that dude come running out and was just like, oh, man, and just walked away.
Okay, and to explain Moose Hands, you can't really explain podcast, but obviously if you do the bullwinkle, like,
yeah, you put your like thumbs antlers. To the sides of your head like antlers. We all just, when the chainsaw guy ran out, we all stopped and just stared at him doing moose hands, and he kind of raised his chainsaw for a brief second, dropped it down to his side, and walked away. Like, whatever.
Could have very well been you, Mike.
I will stop a chainsaw. And
we all look
please
like
don't
cheer.
Ever do that.
And then the following year, he runs into me, and I push the girl out of the way, and I run for my life.
See, that's the thing. We had a scared cat moment. It's like when you have multiple cats laying in a room, and one gets spooked, and the rest of them go like, oh shit, run away, and they all just scatter. So we're walking along, and Reese is at the back of the line.
It wasn't really a push. It was a pickup, move out of the way, and I booked it.
He grabs poor Danielle and, like, literally just lifts her up like, you go here now. And I felt, like, the fear coming up from behind me, and I turn and see him running, and I'm just like, run! And I just start hauling ass down the hall.
And I do believe in karma, and yes, I ran into the wood. The wooden wall. So that's what I get for moving her out of the way to save myself.
I did that a few years ago when I was with a group of friends, and they had like an actual guy the size of Leatherface, like big and bulky and tall. And to me, all I had to do was smell the gasoline at the time.
Yep.
And I was like, frick. And so I was the only one that ran away, and of course he came after me because I'm the dummy and was like, oh, I'm gonna run away, and he came after me and pinned me against a wall, so that was awesome. But
yeah, that's the fun part.
Yeah, but since then I'm not afraid no more. They're Mike. Now if you stand over the bed with it, I mean,
that'd be a hell of a way to wake up.
Come on, let's do it with the chainsaw in my hand.
And it comes full circle. He's got the mask on and everything.
Since we're on this topic, real quick, my favorite scare this past year at Fright World with the chainsaw, there was a mom coming through with like three of her little girls. They were probably like 6 or 7. And I came out with the chainsaw, I kicked the door open, I revved that thing, the mom freaked out, pushed her kids into the wall, she went running, tripped over the one, and went face first into another plank of wood. I couldn't stop laughing.
She was like, I can make more of you, yeah. Be gone.
I brought you into this world quick, I'll get you out quick.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
That's fantastic. That's
awesome. So seeing it from that point of view now, it's like...
Changes it a little bit.
It takes a little bit, yeah. I'm just like, oh, is that Mike? Okay, that's Mike.
Oh, man.
But, yeah.
I will say, going through that place with the lights on, because I took Caleb to the lights on event, it's still pretty damn creepy in that place. Like, especially the, what is it, Grindhouse?
Yeah.
the decorations in there, I'm like, holy hell, like, you don't see half of that in the dark. And then in the light, it's like, this is almost more disturbing, you know?
Well, especially when you see the real ghosts in there.
Yeah.
The asylum house is really haunted. They have a real embalming table. I think they got either from an auction from ECMC or Mercy Hospital a few years back. Well, they had a canister underneath that the embalming fluid and body fluid go into. And they spilled it this year while putting the house up. So
yeah, we were
really haunted in the asylum this year.
F that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, like I said, asylum would be terrifying if it had more lights in it, because it's really pitch black in there. And like, to me, I get claustrophobic when it's pitch black, but like, I like the idea of the decorations, and there's so much work that goes involved. So, you know, all of us being artists, we're in like horror artists, we want to see
the effort. All the,
yeah.
What goes into the stew, you know?
We should do a haunted house episode this year.
Oh, hi. We'll
do a bunch of haunted houses and then.
I'd be down for that. Well, you know, we all go to haunted houses, so.
That'll be our next mission for the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Yeah. Well, that'd be awesome.
We have to invite Danielle.
Well, yeah, she's got part of the Moose Crew.
Yeah.
You know? So Danielle, if you're listening to this, you better show up.
Right. You coming with us so Maurice can move you out of the way again.
And Maurice will literally pick you up and put you in the car.
I won't push you out of the way this time. I'll put you over my shoulder.
He'll do it too. I've seen him.
You're coming with me now.
But to come full circle back to Halloween, the asylum thing reminded me. We were mentioning this before in the podcast, but the for lack of a better term, the rapist you know, guards or whatever they were, that was completely unnecessary. Yeah. Like, it really wasn't necessary. And like Mike, you said that in the version you have, that scene isn't even in there, right?
Yeah, which was really strange, because I remember that scene being so brutal and just unnecessary, and then all of a sudden it wasn't there. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
it's just kind of weird.
It's definitely, I think, just there for shock factor.
It's like a forcible way to make us empathize with Michael. Like, well, yeah, those guys should get killed. But like I said, you know, then 5 minutes later, he kills Danny Trejo, who was the one person who was nice to him. So it's like, you know, the fact we didn't need that there. We could have just shown him, like, they could have come in, messed with his masks, because they already showed the guy trying to mess with him, Lou Temple's character.
Yeah.
So it's like, he could have just been drunk and like, I'm going to go mess with the big guy.
Right.
And, you know, rip one of his masks and have Michael just be like, and you're dead now, you know? Like,
but I think it also is a test to how far Rob Zombie will go and how he's not afraid. Now, I'm not sympathizing with any rape scenes in movies, because I really hate them, obviously, and it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
But like, some people say that for like the neck slicing, the head slicing, or the in the second one when the nurse, oh my god, the sounds of her stabbing, that was like the worst.
That was
so
brutal.
I mean, I think it, like Maurice said, it's shock value.
Yeah.
But like, you also do love seeing them get their heads freaking bashed in by him. So there is a little bit of revenge there, and also he gets out. So there is a little bit of connection there, but and I also like that the one actor is Malachi from Children of the Corn.
And the dude from The Burbs. He's the same. I love that movie. But it's like, I know this is just like a personal quibble, but rape scenes in horror movies, like, and I know they have a place. Like, movies like Last House on the Left, I Spit on Your Grave. Those are truly terrifying movies, because you could see that happening. Like, that is, that's realistic.
That's real life horror. That's maniac zombie that's trying to kill you, which is not.
But that's why I have trouble with it, because, like, I know that it's fake. I know what I'm watching is fake, but it gets under my skin and sticks with me. Like I said, the first time I watched I Spit on Your Grave, I had to keep stopping it, because I was like, this is upsetting me too bad.
Yeah.
And then I forced myself to get through it, but I've never seen the remake. I've never watched it again, because I don't know if I want to experience
that
again.
There's two other sequels to it.
Yeah, I can't do it.
It's like, the revenge that balances it out. Like, the way she gets her revenge in the most brutal ways. Because I did the same thing. I stopped halfway through. I was like, I can't do this. This is really weird.
Yeah.
And this is going to be awkward. But my dad watched it and finished it. And he's like, you need to finish it and see the revenge parts, because it was
Because that's what makes it so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Me, I haven't watched it because
it's hard.
Because it is really hard. And like, you know, when that's like the first main things that happen, it's like unnerving and, you know, so realistic, you know. And so like, I think that's one of the most dominating brutal things that could happen.
Like the worst thing you can do. Yeah, it's like one of the most vile things you can do without killing someone. Yes.
You know, exactly.
Is to completely take away all agency. And well, that's, you know, like I was saying with Get Out, like one of the reasons that the movie was so frightening is because you're removing all agency from a person.
Yeah.
Like when you're basically taking all their rights away.
Yeah.
And violating them. Yeah, and it's like, so it's basically, it's the same with rape. It's like, you're taking all their rights away, and it's just, that to me is so horrific.
Yeah.
And in I Spit on Your Grave, the part that got me so much was they didn't just have one scene.
Yeah.
It wasn't one, it was like...
The first half of the movie.
Yeah, it's like they surround her, and then they let her go, and they do it again. It's like, dude, when is it going to stop? Like, that really upset me.
It's one of those movies where it's like, you want to jump through the TV screen.
Yeah, and you want to beat the shit out of these people.
No, kill them.
Yeah, exactly.
I think with those movies, like, I know it's really weird to say, because that is a very shitty thing to have portrayed, but in a movie like those, it's sort of necessary to build that revenge part.
Oh, right, yeah. Right. It's so that's the whole point of the genre,
That's the point. Yeah.
The revenge balances it out, like I said, but, like, in Halloween, that scene was so unnecessary. It didn't have any point to it.
Yeah, it was, I agree with Reese and Tara that it really felt just like shock value.
Yeah.
You know,
And when you get that, like, the revenge part,
mm-hmm.
you know, not to get off in, like, realistic situations here, but, like, a lot of those situations, they don't get that revenge. Those people,
exactly.
The survivors don't, you know, get a chance to speak. And so when you see that, you're like, yes. Like,
exactly. It's like, you got your comeuppance.
Terrorists throw up, Casper ate him, you know, all that. So, yeah. So I think, you know, that definitely.
You shove that shotgun up his ass.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But you can also do movies like that without the rape. I mean, Hush.
Yeah.
Hush is a great revenge
perfect example.
Movie.
Yeah.
And what was that? Oh, God. What was that movie with the girl on the college campus? Was it Christy? Do you remember what I'm talking about? I kept saying it had like three different names.
One of those weird movies that everyone goes away except for you.
It's yeah.
Like, okay. You're the only one.
It's this girl on a college campus, and like she's stuck there for, I think it was like Thanksgiving or something like that. And this group of three people target her. It's almost like The Strangers kind of thing.
Yeah.
They target her and they're like, we're going to kill this girl and we're going to like videotape it.
Yeah.
And they're killing the security guards and all the people around her. And this girl is badass. Like, she's not like some whiny final girl. She's like, oh, you're going to fuck with me? I'm going to take all y'all. And it's so well done. Like, nothing happens to her. It's like, she's not raped. She's none of that kind of stuff. But it's just like, she's fighting for her life. But it's the revenge still feels, you know, like warranted.
Yeah.
You know, when you see one of these guys get their comeuppance, you're like, hell yeah!
Oh, any revenge movie is fucking awesome.
Right.
Like rooting for that character the entire movie. You're like, yeah! Oh my god, yes!
Get him! let me see here. I'm going to check my notes real quick. Oh, that was one of the things I wanted to mention. One of the scenes in the remake that I thought was done 1,000 times better than the original is the fallout from the murder. In the original movie, it was almost just like the throwaway cold opening, where it's like you see Michael stalking his sister, he kills her, he's outside, and then the parents are like, Michael, oh my god, what did you do?
Mm-hmm.
In this one, it's like you see the killing, his mother comes home, and then like she's like, Michael, what's going on? And then you see the fallout of like the scene falls silent. And it's just kind of like that slow music playing over top of it. And you see the cops pulling out the bodies, the reporter. You see her in hysterics, like screaming, but no sound. That was so chilling to see that whole sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to give it to Rob Zombie there. I thought he did it better than Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, definitely. That was a great sequence.
Because, you know, like how you said the parents come home, like, oh, what's the matter? They were like you're almost picket white fence family.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, what provoked him? Mm-hmm. And the fact, like, he's sitting on the porch with the baby, though.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that tiny bit of light still left in him.
Right.
And, you know, the sirens go. And it's almost like, did he call the cops on himself? Or was it kind of like a precursor to the mom finding the bodies and calling the cops?
Right.
So that's kind of an interesting, I think, way of looking at it was like, did he know what he did was wrong?
But because he pretended like he didn't know later.
Yeah. It was like,
so weird.
Yeah. And he's just talking like a child, mm-hmm. like, oh, I didn't do that.
That wasn't me.
That wasn't me. You know, and so that was kind of weird. And I love the actor they chose because he was so angelic looking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, very feminine, and which I'm super excited because he's going to be at Nickel City Comic
Con. Oh, I keep forgetting he's going to be there.
So I'm excited to meet him and Horror Alley. So,
yeah, that's going
to
be cool.
To go back, it was Christie. It came out in 2014.
Christie was called? Okay, yeah.
It's a, if, you know, anybody listening wants to go and watch it.
Great movie.
Christie with a K.
Highly recommend it.
That scene, that Fallout scene, I think it was really well done, like how you said. And my favorite part is when they're going through, like, it's like at the very end of it where everybody's standing still, like in the middle of whatever they're doing, and then they show him sitting in the cop car.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how they do a scene like that, because I don't know if they just have to really stand there like that, but I thought that was really cool how he did it. I mean,
yeah, it was it basically showed you that, like, everything else in his world doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was, I don't know, I really liked that sequence in particular. But yeah, I mean, again, I know with Carpenter, it was just we're trying to move the story along.
Right.
And here's the biggest difference between the two is with Carpenter, it's strictly a boogeyman story.
Yeah.
Like, he is the boogeyman. He's the embodiment of evil just coming to kill. There's no reason given, no necessary, you know, like, we don't need a reason. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
With this one, it's a Frankenstein story.
Yeah.
It's, you almost feel bad for the monster.
Mm-hmm.
The monster just doesn't know why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he was created by other monsters.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that way. That's pretty cool.
Well, and if you look at the original ending, the now cut ending, but the original ending where he has Laurie and he's holding her up against the door and Loomis is begging him to let her go.
Mm-hmm.
And he slowly drops his arm and lets Laurie go. And the cops have surrounded him. And then they just open fire. It's like the villagers chasing down Frankenstein and killing him.
I've never seen that ending.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's the original ending of the movie.
No shit.
That was in the theater, right?
That's the version I saw in the theater.
The only ending I know is when she blows his head off in the bottom of the pool and then it ends.
I like that much better, actually. Actually, speaking of the pool scene, that I crack up every time I see it. The way Tyler paces back and forth when he's got his head tilted to the side. It looks like he's like, this bitch right here. Like, because she just, like, stabbed him.
Yeah.
It's just, like,
I love the head tilt in the classic and in this one. Just like how he does it.
Or when he tosses the beer.
Yes!
In this one.
In the first one.
Beer, please. And he hangs it up.
Oh, man. Actually, that death scene was brutal in this. The choke out.
Yeah.
Like, oh. I mean, it's not bloody, but it's just like, she lasts a while, and it's like, you're just imagining how much that would suck getting choked out.
Sound in every one of them, like, that, like, crunching.
Yeah.
Subtleness.
It's like your windpipe's going.
But I do have to say, I miss the cord strangle with the
Now she's on the phone. But
yeah,
that is
and
a good
I'm
one.
And she's like, oh my god, what are you doing over there? Like, she's like, ah. She sounded like she's getting it.
She got it.
Yeah, she did get it.
I liked how he didn't keep a lot of the original scenes. Like, he did have the sheet over him, like, as the ghost or whatever. But he didn't have the strangling with the cord, like you guys said.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't have the girl in the car slice her throat, like, behind
yeah.
her.
Right, she ends up living.
Yep.
Surviving to the second
one.
That's actually one of my only beefs with this movie. Not that she survives, but in that particular sequence is the only sequence where Michael makes a sound. You know, like, he's silent. But when he's throwing Annie around the house, he's grunting.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
I like the grunting.
See, but it stands out to me because he doesn't grunt later. It's like, he gets shot, doesn't make a sound. He gets stabbed, doesn't make a sound. He's breaking down walls, not making a sound. And it's like,
no, when he was fighting Joe Grizzly, I'm pretty sure he was grunting as he was slamming him against the wall. I heard him grunt more than
I thought that was Joe Grizzly.
I thought it was him. Because I know in the second one, they continued the grunting.
Well, in part two, they really pick it up. Like, he's making a lot of noise in part two. He's a whole cacophony of noises. Yeah.
He even speaks.
Yeah. Here, die! It's like, come on! That's lame.
Yeah, but then you also question, I mean, I know why they kept Danielle Harris alive, obviously,
right.
Or probably, like, obviously, but, like, in retrospect, she would have been, like, oh, she's, yeah, like, 80 pounds of nothing.
Bears threw the shit out of her.
The scene in where she's laying on the ground and, like, she's beat to shit, and Michael's, like, slowly walking, and Lori's in there calling the cop, and she's screaming for Lori. That, like, gives me chills because, like, you can tell she can't move, and it's like, oh, God.
Fucking listen to your friend!
Yeah.
God damn it!
But can I just point out one thing that I don't even know if any of you would point out, but when she is topless and on the floor, and he's dragging her across that wood floor, and you hear, thinking of her poor boobs. Like,
slivers in the nipples.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Like, I get it's a floor and it's all finished and stuff, but just having that, like, if you slide against something and your dry skin is,
you don't want a rug burn on your nips. Like,
exactly. So, like, and then she rolls over the rug, so you get rug burn too. So,
ouch.
Girl with titties over here. Like, I'm just thinking how badly.
I'll be honest, I didn't think about how bad that would hurt, but now I won't forget that. So next time I watch this, I'm going to be going, oh, her poor boobies.
You know, I don't watch that scene thinking her boobies. I'm thinking, like, usually you see something like that and they're clawing at the floor. And she didn't do it.
Fingernails.
But she didn't do it.
Nope. Stir of Echoes. That's the freaking nail. I can't handle
and
that.
And Texas Chainsaw.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
And The Ring, when their nails are in the wall. Like,
I just, I said it's a very effective moment in a horror movie, but it's so gross.
But it's just like scraping, and then you see the nail bend back. And
that,
it's like,
that gets me more than the Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
So. Yes. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Ah, we're all wigging out over here. Just like, no.
It's like, oh, he's slicing his throat. Like,
oh, yeah, you're cutting the bone. That's awesome. Fingernail breaks.
Oh, no!
I broke my nail! Oh my god.
That's
so
hilarious.
Cringeworthy. Anything to do with fingers, though.
Yeah.
Bending backwards or bending the wrong way or snapping.
Have you guys ever seen Wolf Creek 2?
Yes, but a while back.
I think I stopped here for the first one. Yeah,
there's a finger scene. I won't ruin it in case we do cover it.
Yeah.
But there is a finger scene in that movie that it involves severe finger trauma, let's just say. And exactly. But I had to actually look away from the screen because I'm like, oh, I can't. No. And I could hear it. And I'm like, this is worse. What am I doing? It was so gross.
Oh,
it was toward the end of the movie where he had him captive and was asking him trivia questions, and it was like, if you get one wrong, something bad's gonna happen.
Oh,
it was so gruesome. But one of the things I was gonna say about this was the amount of times that there were ad-libbed moments, and you can actually tell if you know where to look for it. I didn't know where to look for it until I watched the commentary. And apparently Tyler Mane really enjoyed scaring the shit out of Malcolm McDowell. So, like, the scene where Laurie and Malcolm or Dr. Loomis are in the car, and she's like, is that the boogeyman? He's like, as a matter of fact, I do believe it was. And then he busts through and grabs Lori, and you hear about, Jesus Christ!
What, like, the hell?
That was real.
That's
because
awesome.
He
that
didn't
so
know
awesome.
that was going to happen. Like, it's so fantastic, because if you watch it knowing that, you can see the pure terror on his face that then quickly turns to anger. Like, he's like, you sons of bitches.
He's like, what the hell? Jesus Christ.
I love that.
And it's a good scene because I forgot about it. I'm just like, oh, shoot. I jumped back because I totally forgot that he did that.
You wouldn't think somebody that big could move that fast.
But he gets away with it because, you know, he would think he's dead.
Right.
Yeah.
He just jumps in. I guess the scene also in, was it in the ending that we get in this version, in the DVD version, where he grabs Malcolm's head and is, like, squeezing it.
Yeah, does the head crush.
I guess that was another moment where they had to do multiple takes because they didn't tell Malcolm what was going to happen. They said, he's going to grab you. But they didn't tell him where he was going to grab him or how he was going to grab him. So Rob and Tyler were like, well, grab his head. You know, so when he grabbed his, apparently the first take, he just spazzed the hell out and was really pissed and didn't want to do another take.
Well, I don't want to know the size of his hands. Like,
I know, right? Dude, know. Monstrous.
And he's so monstrous. And, well, like, they had the blood coming from his nose and, like,
so, like, he was
and
squeezing
eye.
And,
oh.
Yeah.
And then the crunch. And then, of course, D. Was it D. Wallace?
D. Wallace, yeah.
They, he just... just, like, pressed down on her. And
yeah, it was like
neck.
He bent her in half.
Yeah, it was like, and then she was out like a light.
At least she went quick.
Oh, bitch. Elliot.
That's appropriate. She was the mama there.
Exactly. She was a mom in everything.
Yeah, she was just the 80s mother.
Yeah.
You know?
Joe. E.T.
And she's in so many horror movies.
Yeah.
How I forgot that she was in freaking The Hills Have Eyes, the original Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Until I rewatched it last week.
Jesus.
And I'm like, wait a sec. I forgot she was even in this.
Oh, my God.
That's another movie, man.
Oh.
We'll get there. I've seen the original for that.
Oh, dude.
The Hills Have Eyes?
Yeah.
So good. Like, don't get me wrong, the remake is fantastic, which, I'm just going to say this now, we're eventually going to talk about those.
Definitely. I love that one.
The remake.
Yeah, the remake is fantastic, but, like, the original, the one thing I love about the original, again, I won't ruin it for you, but the way it ends is one of my top three endings of all time in a horror movie. So it's just a solid flick from start to finish, but we will eventually talk about that.
Yeah, because that's too great.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Craven movies.
Yeah, you know? I'm a huge fan of anything to do with, like, chemical, atomic bomb, like, just diseases and stuff, you know, thinking of not just cancer, but, okay, you're going to get deformed children and, like, crazy backwood. Oh, God.
So we can make a horror film about Love Canal, then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking. I was like, oh, we all don't have cancer yet, so.
Which, I have to bring this up. Like, I don't know if any of you guys are watching the Joe Bob Drive-In Theater, or Joe Bob Last Drive-In on Shudder. He covered Chud in one of the episodes.
No. Love that movie.
So the funny thing is, I've never actually liked the movie, but I love the title Chud. The movie is just kind of boring to me, you know. But I didn't know that it was inspired by Love Canal.
Oh, of course it was.
Because, I mean, I've lived here my whole life and never heard that. But here's the best part. I've lived here my entire life and no one has ever made this joke to me. Now, we all know that the Love Canal area, the toxic waste was buried there by the Hooker Corporation, which is, you know, a chemical plant corporation here in Niagara Falls. Well, so Joe Bob's talking about this. He's giving a little background on the Chud episode. And he goes, leave it to a hooker to mess with your love canal. I damn near pissed my pants. I've never heard this joke. And I'm like, this is just one more reason why I love Joe Bob Briggs.
But we're also, what, three streets away from Love Canal?
Yeah, exactly.
So.
As we speak, we're breathing it in right now.
Yep.
You never know.
Well,
there could be some people underground right now.
This is why we have superpowers, people. You know, we got to keep this under wraps. But
what's your superpower, Alvarez?
I can stay up all night.
I'm just super annoying, so. Maurice is like, yes.
Maurice is over here giving the finger guns.
Thanks, Reese. Fuck you.
Cacao.
It doesn't work to put it in after.
That's just so I'll remind myself for later.
She had a cacao, cacao.
Cacao, cacao.
Leave it to Mike McCoy over here, who's from Lancaster, to date a Niagara Falls girl. Sorry.
Just don't piss her off.
I'm one of those Chud people.
She'll just peel her face with milk.
Oh my God.
See, now eventually we are going to have to review Chud just because we're talking about it so much.
Yes.
Okay, I literally fall asleep.
Yeah, you fell asleep during it. It was such a good movie.
See, I have so many problems with it, especially like, because there's like 18 edits of that movie. Like, the scene with the diner, depending on which edit you watch it, it's like in the first half of the movie, then it's at the end, other parts it's in the middle. It's like, they don't care where this falls. They're just like, put it in here, put it in there. It's terrible.
We will have to review The Blob, too, because speaking of diners, that made me think of The Blob. I loved.
That was such a good movie.
Well, then we gotta watch the original, too.
Yeah. That's what, if we do remakes again, I think one of the things we'll have to do is watch, like, back-to-back. Do, like, the original movie and the remake and just talk about them both in one go. Because we're kind of doing that anyways with the original holiday.
Did you guys go see a Blob?
Thursday Night Terrors.
Speaking of Chud, that was, what, 80s?
Yeah, early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Is it early? I thought it was, like, 86.
Well, I think it was earlier than that. I want to say it was before Ninja Turtles came out, which was like 87.
When did It, the book, come out?
That, I think, was... That was definitely in the 80s.
If it was before, Stephen King referenced Chud before the movie ever came out. Because there's a part in the book where it's called The Ritual of Chud when they face Pennywise.
Chud came out in 1984.
And it came out in 86.
There is a Chud, too, that came out in 1989.
Bud the Chud. I have it.
Okay. You're so proud.
I am so very proud because I tracked that frickin' movie down, man. I saw it when I was a kid, on Showtime. Shouldn't have been watching it. I was like, 10 or 11, whatever. And it's a comedy horror. Like, they took Chud and they're like, we know. We get it. Just trust us. There's dance sequences. It is frickin' hilarious.
And there's Daniel Stern.
Yes, indeed. Actually, the original Chud's got... two Home Alone alumni. It's got
John Hurd.
Yeah, exactly.
As George Cooper.
Marv?
Mm-hmm.
Was his name?
Yep.
Marv.
Yeah. Wow. I totally forgot that.
No D. Wallace, though.
No D. Wallace.
D. Wallace is not playing the mom.
In she was in Howling, though.
She was, and she turned into the friggin' poodle werewolf. Or whatever it was at the end.
Dude, they look like crazy Easter bunnies, okay? Those damn ears. I'm like, what is that?
Oh, God.
What is that? And, like, honestly, that was the weirdest. Like, to go to that porn shop with a gangbang.
Yeah.
Like, what is the connection to... All right, just go with it.
We're going to find a seedy place.
And can we talk about, real quick, the transition of the werewolf and his face and how it would transition, and like next scene it would be like his nose is in more, and then it would grow, and then it would be back in more, and then it would grow. It's just like
it was like bubbling on his face.
Literally a half hour transition sequence.
Lady's sitting there waiting for him, flipping through a magazine, like, oh, you're done yet?
Waiting for it.
She's like, oh my god.
You had 15 minutes of time that you could have ran, called the cops, killed this thing, buried him, but you just stayed and watched.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Like, any day now, people.
Just tapping her watch. Yeah.
I'm going to go use the bathroom. I'll be right back.
Kill me later.
Scary movie, too, when they had the Reagan come down peeing for like 10 minutes straight. They're all just watching her. Like, wow. All right, she's still going.
Puddle just was getting bigger and bigger.
Those movies are the best. The second one was great.
You know, the funny thing is, like, I was in the wrong mood when I saw the first movie. I thought the first movie was so dumb. And then I saw the second movie because it was a double feature at the drive-in. And I lost my mind. I'm like, this is so damn funny.
Yeah.
And then so I immediately went out to see part three when that came out. Oh, and that was hilarious, too.
The third one. I think the third one might be my favorite. That's the one with signs, right?
Yes. Yes. That one was really funny.
My God. In the ring.
Yeah.
So I
She's fighting her.
She's like, this bitch messing up my floor.
I love that scene.
That is like, she's the best actress ever. So freaking hilarious. But yeah, I love it.
The only scene in the first scary movie that really stuck with me, and it was really funny, was when, because I mean, the whole first scary movie, they're just parodying Scream. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, yeah, they touch on other stuff, other pop culture moments, but it's primarily a parody of the first Scream movie. And after the first death in Scream, you have all those different news stations out in front of the school. And in Scary Movie, you have the same thing. And it's the one that just says, was it Black News? Or yes. And the guy goes, all we know is white people are dying, we're getting the hell out of here. And they just jump in the van and drive away. They're like, we're just done.
Why can't you say we're getting the fuck out of here?
That was so effing well done.
And then you had Dewey?
Oh,
shit.
Yeah. Officer Doofy.
Yeah. Officer Doofy.
I told you not to disturb me. I'm cleaning your room.
The vacuum.
I love that movie so much.
See, now there's a franchise that at one point, somewhere down the line, I'm going to make everyone watch with me. Is the Scream. Because, again, I am a Scream apologist. I love all four of them. And I love that series.
Well, my best friends love it. I don't.
I liked the Netflix series that they started doing. I thought that was really well done.
MTV, actually.
Or was it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I totally agree. When I heard they were doing a television series, I'm like, how?
I thought it was going to be stupid, and I watched a couple episodes. I was like, wow, this is good, and I got hooked. I finished
I actually binge watched
it. I think my thing against Scream was I didn't care for the actors, so like,
yeah, I can see that, but
it was like Courtney Cox. I can't stand her. Sorry.
It was
David Arquette. I am like, ugh, like, I don't know. They're just goofy to me, so I'm like, no.
For me, it is because, like, again, growing up in that era where it's like, I mean, I was you know, a teenager when that came out, and being a horror fan since I was a little kid in the 80s, like, horror was dying in the 90s. Like, yeah, there was still a few gems here and there, but you were primarily getting stuff like Halloween Resurrection, or not Resurrection, Curse of Halloween, or Curse of Michael Myers, the sixth one, which is just the worst in the franchise.
I actually like that one the most.
Really? Part six?
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was really creepy. I hate that
movie. And, I mean, that's the one with freaking, what's his name? Dude who played Ant-Man. Paul Rudd?
Yeah.
He's oh, I hate that movie. But, I mean, there were so many, like, bad 90s movies. Like, there were some good ones. Like, In the Mouth of Madness, you know, Demon Knight, From Dusk Till Dawn. You know, there were some good ones in there.
But Paul Rudd hasn't aged since then, either.
No, I know. He's a Time Lord. Like, he just doesn't age.
You know he's 50?
He's 50?
Yeah.
Jesus, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he just turned 50, and they're all saying he's a vampire. He's like, he's so young looking. He doesn't age.
He really doesn't.
It's not fair.
But no, like, the Scream movies, the thing that I liked so much about it is it breathed life back into my favorite genre, which is the slasher genre. And it was like, the only way we can do this is to, you know, make fun of it. You know, the movies are becoming parodies of themselves anyways. Like, I mean, again, look at Friday the 13th Part 9. We were talking about that last time. Where it's like, it's just ridiculous. Pure insanity.
Well, even just to say Part 9
right.
is ridiculous in itself.
Absolutely. There's all the slasher movies that have so many sequels to them. But
yep.
You're right, they did make fun of themselves. Like in the second one, that one character was always talking about how to survive the horror movie.
Yeah.
He was my favorite one. Killed them off.
And that's the thing, like, it was the first time we had like a meta horror movie.
Yeah.
Where it was kind of like, we were in on the joke, but it was still very clever.
Yeah.
And like, you know, again, I won't go into all this now, but each film parodied something else. Like, the first one was about slasher movies, the second one was about sequels, the third one was about the trilogy, the fourth one was about reboots. So it's like, it was really cool the way they touched on each of those like horror staples. So I don't know. I'm a Scream apologist.
It lost me after two.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I watched them all, but I didn't like
honestly. Scream movies after two. Most people I know don't like them. You know, I have a lot of friends that love horror movies, and they are just like, I don't like Scream movies. I was like, that's fine. I can totally understand why.
I mean, I really enjoy the first one.
Oh, first one's classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but let me see. How long are we in on this already? Well, we're over an hour, so I think maybe we should probably cut this here.
Yeah.
Does anyone have anything else they want to mention about Halloween before we end it off?
Oh, we love Rob Zombie. Yeah.
Never Rob Zombie, if you're listening, come
hang out.
Never mentioned that the sheriff was Chucky.
Yeah, Brad Dourif.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah,
love Brad Dourif. He's good in everything.
He really is.
Like, he was great in friggin' Lord of the Rings. You know, yeah. He played Wormtongue in that.
Forgot about that. Yeah. I've been trying to get Mike to watch it with me because I actually haven't seen it and watched them in years, and I used to love them.
They're so good.
We're gonna have to rewatch those for sure. But.
I own, it's the same, but different. I have all three Hobbit movies, but I've yet to see the third one yet.
The Hobbit movies left a little to be desired, in my opinion. Yeah. That was kind of a bummer.
I'm having a hard time going back and wasting 2.5 hours, I think.
Yeah.
But that's a different subject.
Yeah.
We could touch on those movies a little bit. I think they're not necessarily horror, but...
Little side note about them, though. They are directly... They owe their pedigree to horror.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it wasn't for Nightmare on Elm Street, we would have never gotten Lord of the Rings. Because with Nightmare on Elm Street, New Line Cinema was the house that Freddy built. They literally banked all of their money on the first Nightmare on Elm Street. And when it made a return... the company was able to stay afloat.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept making sequels. And eventually, when they were going to do the last one, they hired Peter Jackson. Because mm-hmm. they were like, oh, he did that, you know, what was it, Meet the Feebles and Dead Alive and all that by that point. So, like, he's this up-and-coming horror director. Let's bring him in to do a draft. Well, they didn't end up using what he wrote, but they liked him. Mm-hmm. So he had a good rapport with New Line Cinema. So when he was shopping around Lord of the Rings, and no one would allow him to do three movies, they were like, well, condense it into one. you know, he was like, no, I'm not going to do that. He went to New Line, and they're like, well, if you can do it for this budget, you got yourself a deal. And he friggin' did it. You know? So if it wasn't for Nightmare on Elm Street, if it wasn't for Freddy Krueger, we wouldn't have had Frodo.
Yes!
But on that note, I think we're going to sign off. So this is Mike saying goodbye.
Bye.
Tara saying bye.
Checking out.
Peace. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.